GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar. This is the George Hill Rick Tyler Show. Brett Baber of Lanham Blackwell and Baber. He's behind the bulletproof glass over in Spacious Studio 7A. Let's dig right into a very curious case. What do you got for us today, sir?
Well, Rick and George, I have a law school test question for you.
Okay, test question.
I'm going to pass the
bar. We're going to go through a bunch of these today.
All right.
In the field of Maine law, what is rarer than a blue lobster?
I got that. You got that.
I heard Rick give the answer to everybody before in the bumper before the
what is the
last segment.
Having
the last answer is a law court decision reversing an OUI conviction due to an evidentiary error by the trial court.
I don't
follow the law that close, but I don't remember talking about one.
Well, we just had one. We just had one August 6th in a decision written by Chief Justice Saufley in State of Maine versus Donald Rutherford. The law court overturned an OUI conviction due to an evidentiary error.
What did Donald Rutherford allegedly do?
Well, the conviction's been overturned, so it's back to the word allegedly. He was found with a friend, and I think it was a girlfriend from the opinion, in a ditch. They went off the road one night, and a police officer came upon the scene of the car in the ditch and two people standing there. And the friend said, the officer asked what happened, and the friend said that Mr. Rutherford wasn't from the area and missed the turn because he wasn't familiar with the road. So that implies that Mr. Rutherford is behind the wheel, and one of the two things you have to prove in an operating under the influence case is who was the operator of the motor vehicle. Mr. Rutherford just stood there, said nothing, and it basically went to trial on that set of facts. He went to the, did the field sobriety test. He went to the police station, blew a .08, according to George. That's on the lowest end of the scale that will get you convicted. You could be convicted on your own, you know, behavior and conduct if you're still below .08. I don't want to give that misimpression, but it went to trial, and that's what the officer testified, that this friend said. And for lawyers and folks, once somebody says something, our hearsay antenna go up. Oh, somebody said something out of court. So the defense, now here's the next test question. The defense lawyer at trial objected to the testimony of the officer that the friend said Mr. Rutherford was driving. What was the trial court's ruling at trial? Overruled or sustained?
Well, isn't that hearsay? I report that she said to me, well, no, it's not hearsay.
Well, that was the objection. And technically it is hearsay because, and I'll get into hearsay in a moment, but there is an exception to the hearsay rule, and the state chimed in with this exception. Your Honor, it's what we call an adoptive admission. So if I walk upon a scene and let's say this was a civil case involving a car crash and the same thing happened. That might be an adoptive admission where you listened to George. George said Rick was driving and you didn't speak up and say, no, I wasn't. You just stand there silent. That might be admissible as an adoptive admission in a civil trial.
I get it. Because I didn't disagree, I stayed silent. That would mean that I must be agreeing.
You're
with
agreeing
it.
By silence. The idea of an adoptive admission. And in this case, the trial court overruled the objection and let it go in as this adoptive admission idea, even though it's technically hearsay. Now, hearsay, the hearsay rule, everybody's probably heard about it. It's been around since merry old England and the common law and the criminal law of England, and it haunts law school students tremendously. It showed up on my evidence exam from our law school professor, who gave us this test question from Macbeth, and he these questions were written for, right, you know, literally passages out of Macbeth, and we had to spot the evidentiary errors in there. And you can imagine all the hearsay that was going on among the witches stirring the pot at the beginning of Macbeth. But it's still a very vital rule of evidence. But in this case, it came down to constitutional implications. Ordinarily, the rules of evidence are designed to assure truthfulness and fairness and reliability of evidence at trial. But in this instance, it came down to the constitutional aspects of it. So now that I've given you the constitutional background, which constitutional right is at stake if you're just standing there silent listening to George accuse you of being the driver that put it in the ditch?
Which one? You're the constitutional scholar, George. You were there when it was written. What one is it?
I'm really drawing a blank on
eighth?
This.
No, it can't be eighth.
No. It's the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Yeah.
Because
which opened a couple of questions to me that aren't constitutional, and I'm not trying to get ahead of myself here.
No, go right ahead.
I understand there's some video that came into the trial, and the other basic question I had, if he wasn't the driver, why does he submit to all these tests? He took a breath test. I think he did a breath test,
at the station.
But he did a blood test, too. If you weren't the driver, why would you agree to that?
Well, they first put him through. They had probable cause based upon this adoptive admission. So they can say, sir, I want you to perform these field sobriety tests. And he went ahead and performed them and apparently did poorly enough that they decided to arrest him, take him down to the station, blows a breath test to 0.08. Going to Rick's point about the video, there was video from the officer cam, again, showing this person making the statement. So we know the person. We don't have to necessarily believe the officer because we've got it on video that the friend in the car said, Mr. Rutherford's not from around here, and that's why he missed the road. But the video still has the hearsay in it. It doesn't become non-hearsay simply because it's on video, because it's out of court. But the law court found that in a criminal case, and I'm going to just quote here, it is a critical principle in criminal proceedings that because the adoptive admission of a defendant charged with a crime is tantamount to a confession, stripped of constitutional safeguards against self-incrimination, a criminal defendant's mere presence when a statement is made is insufficient to support a finding of adoption. So the law court went into the Constitution. That shows the interplay between our evidentiary law and the constitutional law, especially in criminal trials. So to be an adoptive admission now, you know, you'd have to actually say something like, yeah, I agree with her, or I agree with George, or maybe nodding your head up and down. That might be a possibility. Okay. Now, the other reason this case is interesting, you know, I can hear it now about a half hour from now on legal briefs, not on legal briefs, on things that tee you off, sponsored by Lana Blackwell and Baber. On things that tee you off, they're going to say, well, this guy got off on a technicality. You know, we can hear that, you know, sort of outrage over people getting off on a criminal charge because of a technicality. And I hasten to remind the listening audience that what we're speaking about as a quote-unquote technicality is our U.S. Constitution. The Constitution is there to protect everybody and to assure that our constitutional rights are preserved. And we also have built around the Constitution these rules of evidence to make sure the trial is a fair trial. You have a constitutional right to a fair trial. And there's also a constitutional right to cross-examination. And it's pretty hard to cross-examine the police officer about what somebody said at the scene. And the other fact we haven't really mentioned here is that person that was at the scene, the girlfriend, wasn't there to testify. Now, I don't know whether that's because they were from away and they couldn't subpoena her or what. And that may have some importance because the case doesn't simply go away simply because the law court overturned the previous jury trial conviction, by the way, it doesn't go away. It's remanded or sent back to the trial court. And the trial court will ask the state, are you going to retry this case? And they have to decide, are they going to retry the case? If this other witness is in the state of Maine, they simply subpoena that person, bring her into court and live, and they would ask her point blank, who was driving the car? And presumably she would say, Mr. Rutherford, case closed, it's over. So he's not necessarily getting away on a technicality. In fact, many of these cases, we talked about motions to suppress a lot earlier this year in a couple murder trials. Even though the defendant's statements may be suppressed, there's still a whole lot of other evidence that can be brought to bear on these cases, and the case could still go forward under the applicable constitutional rules and the rules of evidence.
Well, for the layman, with to know you, let's go further. As a layman in this case, what mistake was made? The trial court, the defense said the trial court made an error in not excluding the breath test results from trial based on evidence that was presented by the state. So what big mistake, in common everyday language, what mistake did the court say the trial court made?
The law court said the trial court erred when it allowed the police officer to basically parrot the statement from the girlfriend that was on the scene that Mr. Rutherford's not from around here and he missed the road. That was the statement that the law court considered hearsay with this extra layer of constitutional protection against self-incrimination.
Okay.
So that's the error.
An unusual case.
Very unusual. In fact, evidentiary errors in all, the many cases that go to the law court, there are usually one or two evidentiary issues. And the law court basically has a higher standard of review. If it's a close question, the law court will defer to the trial court. It has to be pretty obvious that it's a mistake for the law court to overturn an evidentiary error, because you're under the heat of the moment in trial. The questions are popping, the answers are coming, and first off, you have to have an objection. And here, this lawyer, the defense lawyer, was astute enough to remember his or her law school training that there's a hearsay implications.
That might answer our question before we run out of time. Is this a case where the prosecution dropped the ball, or a case where the defense attorney was a rock star?
Both. I don't know why the state simply didn't bring in the girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually what happens. They will subpoena the witness, and then the witness testifies live, and you can cross-examine the witness. Here, that didn't happen. We don't know why it didn't happen. Maybe she's from out of state. If she's living out in Utah somewhere, they can't necessarily haul her back here to testify.
For an OUI,
For an OUI.
Which seemed like and credit where credit is due. Do you know the name of the defense attorney who was the, my word, not yours, rock star?
Well, I can tell you on appeal, it was Jeremy Pratt and Ellen Simmons for Mr. Rutherford. Now, I don't know whether they were trial counsel or not, but they were the appellant counsel who went on to convince the law court that this was an erroneous decision in the trial court.
Wow. GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.